Welcome, everybody, to episode 69 of Running Into the Fog. It feels like forever since we've gathered with you all. And it, in some ways, especially the way I feel like I age these days, it does feel like it's every day is Groundhog's Day. And while we might not have gathered since around the 21st of June for episode 68, well, I might take the opportunity to remind you, we heard from a young man named Jake Bernstein that day. Here we are, August 30th. And summer is basically over. We're calling this the episode known as Back to School on Running Into the Fog. So I don't know about you, Eric, but three of my four kids are back in school, and it has offered a tremendous sort of resurgence to structure in our household. Maybe needed.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement. And I am looking forward to the day after Labor Day when the three who still live with me go back to school myself. I got the college kid back last weekend, and now we're gearing up to get the rest of them back in school. I took them shopping for school supplies last night. So there's something about going shopping for school supplies that suggests that life is about to calm down for the fall.
Yeah. It's funny how the parents are always excited for that. The kids, sometimes not so much.
Not so much. Yep. Well, we've got an exciting guest today, Derek. Why don't you introduce our Running Into the Fog guest number 69?
It would be my honor. You know, a few years ago, I'm gonna say somewhere between 4 years, give or minus, plus or minus 6 months on that. In our industry, known as competitive intelligence, we had the opportunity to meet a gentleman who I think I'm going to say sacrificed quite a bit to come in and serve as executive director of our trade association. I will always know it as the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals, but I know that wasn't the name, CAM, when you joined. It was Strategic and Competitive Intelligence Professionals, SCIP, S-C-I-P. Yeah. I see some old friends on the participant list, the attendee list here today. Maybe some of them will come on in the second half of our time together and interlocute with you. At least that's my hope. But when you and the Johnson brothers got first connected, you know, that was a real blessing. We got to know each other pretty well, I think, over that time. Now you're on to the International Safety Equipment Management Association.
Association, yeah. Just it's word salad, ISEA. So basically the folks that make stuff that keep workers safe. So nothing to do with competitive intelligence, but man, I miss the great CI community. So I was excited to get the invite back to talk to you fine gentlemen.
Great to see you, Cam. So excited to hear what you've been up to. And if I may, you'll see a QR code on your screen, everybody. That's to scan to redeem the PO app, which is a crypto token, an NFT called Proof of Attendance Protocol. We use those to give access to privileges down the line and with some of the other stuff that we make available out on the interwebs and in Web3. So give that a scan, redeem your PO app, and join us back here again in the future. But we will be having two sort of segments to our show today. And again, forgive me for my inexperience. I feel like this is the first time I've done one of these in a while. So it's fun to have you back doing this with us today, Cam. But the first half is called Unthinkable. Cam's going to reveal to us a few of the ideas and notions that we may have been sheltered from, particularly in the safety world and what the issues are in his landscape today and globally. And then about halfway through, we're going to be cutting off all you folks on social, and you're going to have to go over to the webinar bridge. So visit openrecon.com, and you'll be able to figure out how to register and get back on the webinar bridge like we have with our couple of dozen folks in the attendance today. So second half, we're going to turn Cam over to three of our interlocutors. I need three volunteers from the audience on the webinar. Just let me know in the chat who wants to interlocute Cam in the second half. And I know there's a couple of regulars on there who are pretty good at it. So Cam, with that, Derek, please, sorry to interrupt.
You know, Cam, your background is trade association executive through and through, right? Which was, at least at the time we got to know each other, a little bit of a divergence for the better, I would argue, to somebody that didn't necessarily have deep or expanded knowledge about competitive intelligence, but you knew how to run a trade association, which looking back on it, you know, you took that job shortly before COVID entered our all of our lives and homes. And, you know, I got a bit of a front row seat to watching you navigate really uncertain waters for a trade association. But can you describe for our listeners, first question would be, you know, what was it like to be an association executive pre-COVID, during COVID, and post-COVID?
Yeah. Wow. So you're not opening with a softball here at all.
No.
It's a great question. I think COVID's kind of the thing that really, you know, pulled the tablecloth out and kind of upset the world. And so I think, you know, a couple things that really helped, you know, me as a person, as a leader, but also just, you know, Skip as an organization through the pandemic. And the first one was having a great board. Any nonprofit, you know, there's no owner, right? You know, we're not like a public company where we're owned by, you know, stockholders. We're not, you know, a private company that's owned, you know, by the founder. So, you know, there's no owner, right? You know, our members have sweat equity. So our board was absolutely fantastic in guiding us through that. And as much as it was tough for me, guys, it was actually tougher for our board because in January 2020, almost all of our board changed over. So I think, you know, the first recipe, kind of the lesson learned for COVID was having really good, engaged, and passionate governance in place. The second thing was the team. And so we were really lucky at Skip to have Lisa Bottolato and Michelle Winter there. And I think the what really made, you know, us a stronger association was just their flexibility and their adaptability. With COVID, I think, as we all knew, we all saw every day there'd be something new, whether it's a scary stat or, you know, a new variant. And so, you know, bringing in that adaptability, that flexibility and that agility was so important. And I think, yeah, you know, what Michelle and Lisa did in that vein was excellent. The last thing I'd say, and this, you know, it's going to be true of any business, guys, it's you always got to listen to your stakeholders and, you know, your members and your partners. And, you know, with COVID, it was even more important. And I think one thing I learned is just being real. You know, if you're up against a wall, whether it's, you know, financial or strategic or whatever, just, you know, find that humility, that humbleness, and just be straightforward with folks. And I think I was really impressed, you know, and, you know, pretty much all my interactions with members and partners, we were all in it together. We all got it. So no need to put on a front, just kind of be real, bring your full self to work. And that, you know, I think for me as a person and for us as a team and a board helped us navigate COVID pretty well.
Yeah, I think there's a huge lesson in there. You know, authenticity will win the day, even if it leads to difficult discussions, conversations, et cetera, you know, which are sometimes unavoidable, right? But if you're authentic and you remain, you know, true to the mission, you know, like I saw you do, I think that's always going to overcome, you know, relatively minor objections. And you'll have an opportunity to get people, whether it be your board, other stakeholders on your side.
Yeah.
Eric, what do you think?
Well, I think that we've got the greatest audience in the world because we've up our three interlocutor slots like that. You'll be turned over to Jim Miller. He'll have you for up to 10 minutes. Jay Nakagawa will be second, speaking of board members from Skip. And Ellen Naylor is going to wrap us up here today. So thank you three. And that's anyone great. Who thought about it, better luck next time. You got to be quicker than Jim, Jay, and Ellen in order to get your hand up. You know, I want to say thank you, first of all, for getting me out of the house for the first time in about a year and a half back at Skip 2022, Cam. Yeah. I thought, you know, coming back and doing that in the Twin Cities like we did was really, really meaningful. We hadn't had a conference in a couple of years, maybe 3 years. Was it 2019 was the last one?
It was supposed to be May 2020, but, you know,
Yep.
May 2019.
And so actually in June of 2019, you and I went to the UK and did a workshop in London. And I tried to invite you along on my family's camping trip to Scotland, but I think you were a little weirded out by that maybe. So no worries. It's okay. I'm a weird guy. I make weird invitations all the time. That was a great sort of dismount from, I think, a lot of the things that were happening in the competitive intelligence world at the time. And then, of course, lockdown hit and sort of brought the world to a halt for a couple of years after that until the spring of 2022. And you know, you have now moved on to the Safety Equipment Association. Tell us about that. I want to hear about what you're doing these days and what are some of the issues in your landscape today?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. So yeah, I joined, I guess about 15, 16 months ago, my current org. So it's a nonprofit like Skip, but in a little bit different. We don't just serve a profession like Skip does, competitive intelligence. We actually serve an industry. And for us, you know, it's, we call it, you know, PPE or personal protective equipment, but also safety equipment. So, you know, anything you'd wear on your body. So go to a construction site, you know, you got the fancy eyewear, the helmets, high-vis vests, also things like first aid kits, you know, the things that we see probably every day in our lives, but maybe we don't think about. And so I was fortunate to come in, you know, the organization's got a good value prop, really passionate members. I mean, they're here for the right reason because they just want to keep workers safe, good financial footing. And it was really an opportunity to kind of just level up our game. And a lot of the things we've been doing have been very exciting. There are some of these, you know, contentious societal issues like, you know, climate change, which, you know, you have a few people argue about it and they might, you know, start beating each other up about whether they believe it or not. Reality is for workers, it's hotter, you know, and you can say, is it this or that? They don't care. It's, you know, I think Fort Worth had 40 days above 110 or some crazy number. And so if you're outside working, that's not just uncomfortable, that's dangerous. And so we're doing a lot of work, not just with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That's our, you know, government body in the US that cares about worker safety. So we're working with the government, working with manufacturers of PPE, working with users of PPE, just, you know, how can we rethink this, keep workers safe while they're getting good work done. So, you know, that's one of the areas that we've been investing a lot in. And another is really thinking through sustainability, which, you know, guys, I just came back from a couple of weeks in Europe for vacation. And, you know, what I saw as a visitor, sustainability is everywhere. You know, you walk into a hotel, it has a sustainability rating, all the car ads have, you know, how sustainable is this car, all the housing, house ads do. And so in the US, we're still, you know, really figuring out a response. And so what we're trying to do as an industry is think through vests, you know, something we never think about. These things, you know, you wear them for a couple months and you pitch them. What can we as an industry do to keep workers safe, but also to maybe shrink our environmental impact? So it's an exciting time to kind of, you know, look at these and other issues and help, you know, give our members the tools they need to reinvent themselves. And honestly, end of the day, we're about keeping workers safe. So the mission's pretty hard not to get a warm fuzzy about. So I've been loving that.
About innovation in the safety space, I'm actually working with a company right now, and I got to be intentionally vague so you can't figure out who it is. One of the things they are trying to fix are hypodermic needle punctures, accidental needle sticks, and apparently there's over 1,000 of those a day that happen, and that only about half of them get reported. I was fascinated to find out that, boy, that's still as big a problem as 1,000 people a day potentially are getting hepatitis or, you know, whatever it is the patient is that you're trying to treat. And then all that goes into that full world. Now, they've got a pretty innovative solution for it that I can't tell you about. But I'm fascinated by sort of all of these kind of prophylactic equipment and sort of protective gear that prevent accidents from happening, maybe minimize the consequences of the actions if an accident does take place, or mitigate and remunerate the damage done. You know, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what's the innovation that you're seeing coming out of your sector. Yeah.
So it's different, right? You know, so prior to Skip, I worked for a manufacturing association. It was like pretty highly engineered products. So like, you know, for example, Gilbarco Vita Root, they make gas pumps, like you go to the gas station, and they were doing all this cool, like Internet of Things, you know, so we could, use our Apple Pay, and you could watch TV screens. So like, you know, digitalization. And I tell you, for safety equipment, it's not that it's not there, but it's really not prime time yet. And so a lot of the innovation in safety equipment is thinking through, we're the last line of defense. What are things that frankly are low cost, because this is a lower margin business than, you know, if you're making like servers or other things. What can you do low cost that will prevent a risk? And a couple of examples that kind of blow my mind. So if you think about, you know, even before the pandemic, we buy a lot of stuff, right? You know, a lot of stuff in boxes, whether it's from Amazon, Walmart, Target. And it's not just what we get as consumers, but it's in all the warehouses, right? And so you think about the number of people opening boxes a day. It's, you know, I don't have a stat, but it's probably bananas. So this blew my mind. The average cost of, like, say you cut your hand, you know, you open, you know, take some scissors. I want to open a box, cut my hand. The average cost of that is about $45,000. So by the time, you know, you go to the hospital, there's workers' comp, time off, you know, any of that. It's like a good chunk of change, not to mention a hurt worker. So one innovation, which I'm super jazzed about, is instead of scissors, companies now, they make these safety knives. Some of them are even like a type of ceramic, which is like specially sharpened. I'm not an engineer, so I don't get it. But you poke yourself, you can't cut it, but it somehow slices through a box. Basically, it's even cheaper than scissors. You can get them as consumers, but it's out there. You know, it's really idiot proof. They're cheap. They're safer. And spoiler alert, the stuff that's porcelain or ceramic, you can actually send it back to the manufacturer and they make it into dentures. So like crazy, right? Like crazy wow. Stuff. And so it's a total win-win. And so like things like that are, you know, really exciting, because it's like, I never realized this is a problem, but you know, like I have young girls and, you know, they're opening Amazon boxes and one day something's going to happen. So that's like one example that, you know, like, you know, it's similar to a puncture, but something you didn't know was an issue. It really is. And there are these kind of exciting innovations that are geeky, but really help keep people safe.
Super cool. See, I never would have thought of that. But there's stuff like that everywhere. I was watching a show the other day. It was one of those home like remodel shows, and they had one of the inductive cooktops. Yeah, now I'm old fashioned. I don't have that in my house. I don't really understand how it works. And then I've discovered that you need special like crockery right. and stuff that works and interoperates with that system in order for that to work. But cool to the touch, but still brings water to a boil in like 10 seconds or whatever it is. That kind of stuff, that's where I see a lot of, and it's obviously a safety feature for you to be able to touch your cooktop without burning your hand. Yeah. So there's stuff like that going on everywhere. And I'm just fascinated by human ingenuity like that.
It's amazing. I mean, I think the you know, there's the sexy innovations, you know, that we read about in Wired or Inc. or whatever, and you know, whatever. I don't need to go into those, but it's really exciting that there's this kind of, you know, almost mundane innovation, but it makes a huge difference. So like another example is, if you go to OSHA's website and you say, hey, what are the biggest injuries? It's been falls for like ever. And it's sure. You know, by far. And I mean, it's kind of scary when you dig into it. You know, it's the, whenever you see like an arborist go up a tree, you know, way too often, they're not wearing the right stuff. But something that gets a lot less attention is if you're working up high, say a construction, you know, a gal's working a construction site and she has like a hammer. And if that hammer is not tied off to you, you can drop it. And that is bad news for the person below you. So, so like another innovation, which it's pretty simple, but you know, what this didn't exist 10 years ago is just using like little like lanyards. So, you know, you have your tool belt and you can like, you know, just have this kind of interoperable system where I'm going to tie off all my stuff so nothing's going to fall off my body. So something that you would say, Cam, that's really boring and geeky. Why are you talking about this? But it saves lives. You know, it improves productivity. It saves the economy money. So it's kind of fun. And so as you can tell, I'm kind of, you know, having a good time geeking out on this in this industry.
That's awesome. Derek, I've monopolized the conversation a little bit here. I'll let you get a word in edgewise.
I was just, you know, it's come up on this podcast before, but it seemed like I needed some of Cam's safety equipment that time you shot me in the belly with a BB gun.
oh man.
I'm trying to wonder what you got in store for like the younger brother where, you know, older brother picks on him. Got anything for people that fit that category?
Cummerbund maybe? I don't know.
Well, you know, those big body suits that you're in when you're trying to like train an attack dog, you know, like the ones where you can't move your arms, that sounds like that's what you need for there.
Exactly.
What's so ironic about it is we love each other these days, but there was a time, you know, in our childhood where we kind of ran the other direction, or at least I tried. Eric often outrun me and tackle me down.
That specific story, by the way, was my attempt to see if I could outrun my father. And I knew that if I shot my brother in the stomach with a pellet gun, I would be ready to find out. And I could. I did outrun him, as a matter of fact. Anyway, we digress. But,
What you're talking about with that cool to the touch, but it'll heat up boiling water quickly, kind of reminds me of the innovation where, like, if your kid breaks their wrist and they get a, you know, some type of cast put on it, the little saw that will come along and cut that, but not your skin. Right. I'm still fascinated. I'm 49 years old. And every time I see that actually in person, I'm still fascinated as to how that little device doesn't puncture skin at all.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm easily entertained.
No, it's, there's so much stuff like that, which is just so great. And I like it because it's kind of, you know, in a lot of ways, at least in this country, our workers can sometimes be unsung heroes. You know, it's, you know, a lot of, whether it's construction jobs or like food service jobs, I mean, you know, they're not sexy, right? You know, it's, and often, you know, the average person doesn't understand what they do and the risks. And so, yeah, it's like you say, with the cast, you know, it's, I'm glad someone thought about this because, man, if they didn't, I'd be missing a hand or your brother would shoot you again. So you're glad someone's worried about it.
Is there, do you guys, or maybe you're behind this, there used to be a huge industrial safety and health meeting in Chicago at McCormick Place back in the day. Is that still,
yeah, is that? Yes, that's not us. No. So that, yeah. So you're thinking of, it's one of two groups. So it's associations or acronym soup. So I apologize. One is ASSP, which is the American Society of Safety Professionals. So say you're,
I bet they'd never get teased about that one.
I know, man. Anyway, they actually changed it to that a few years ago. So chew on that for a while. It was probably that group. And so that's the Environmental Health and Safety Professionals. So they would buy the stuff that our members make. So Boeing or McDonald's or, you know, anyone, those are the folks that are in charge of keeping their employees safe.
I had an affiliation with an orthopedics company that made two very fast growing segments in this world. One at the time, this is like 30 years ago, by the way, but one at the time was for back supports because spinal and like specifically disc ruptures from lifting, from people not knowing how to lift with their legs and stuff, was one of those fast growing therapeutic areas. And apparently their back support had proven that it could compress that so it wouldn't happen. Okay. And then the other one was carpal tunnel and repetitive stress injuries from carpal tunnel and like wrist braces that put your hands at the right angle and stuff. Are there fast growing segments today that, like, I don't know if those are still fast growing segments, but of course that was when computers were becoming part of office life. So people are on the computers all the time getting carpal tunnel syndrome. So it was a very fast growing segment. Yep. What's a fast growing segment today for you?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned that. So Amazon, which is one of the biggest employers, you know, not just in the country, but in the world. So that, you know, they've gotten a lot of flack over the last couple of years for, you know, either their warehouses not being safe, or the delivery drivers, you know, they're kind of, you know, don't have air conditioning, don't have water. And so that's the stuff that gets the headlines, fair or otherwise. But, you know, so what their hands down biggest injury is actually ergonomics. So it's basically the person in the warehouse who's either doing the same thing over and over again. It's like a repetitive stress motion in your hand, like carpal tunnel, your back, or, you know, you're trying to, you know, lift something a little heavier or above you. And so that's, you know, those kinds of things, you know, frankly, they're not going away. One of the kind of the puzzling things is that despite a ton of attention and innovation in not having workers fall, so whether that's, you know, the dramatic falls from several stories or even just like tripping, the stats have actually gotten worse for the last 5 years. And so, you know, there's lots of theories about the why, but, you know, that's certainly a big issue. Probably the biggest emerging injury area is heat stress or heat exhaustion. And so the data tell you really different things, guys, depending on who you listen to. So if you go to OSHA, you know, so the government, they do their very best to track this stuff, and they'll tell you, hey, you know what, in the US, 40 workers die a year because of the heat. But separately, they'll say, we know this is a big undercount. We don't have a sense of the real number. There was a really good study that just came out that said, look, we think up to 2,000 workers in the US alone are dying every year, and it's going to get a lot worse. And so you know, the positive side is it's getting a lot of legislative attention. Washington is noticing, despite some backslides, like in Texas, Governor Abbott said, hey, you know, you guys can't have individual rules by county. But there is a lot of innovation that's working to support, basically, to, you know, help keep people cool on the job. So that's probably the fastest growing injury area and where a lot of innovation is getting done. Regulations happening, albeit too slowly. And so we're doing a lot of work in that area as well.
Super cool.
What do you think, Cam? Cam, what do you think are the biggest threats to you as an association executive and as an association executive of your current operation?
Yeah. I'd say just, you know, as me kind of as a as an associations executive is not paying attention to what's happening outside. I mean, it's a platitude, stuff changes, we all know it, but it you know, the association world is no exception. You know, it's we live in this kind of interesting time now where we have a lot of our boomer members who have not yet retired, and you know, as a segment, they like certain types of things, types of interaction, types of services, but we have younger members who in generally want something really different. And so I think it's the, you know, having to have the discipline, you know, one size fits all doesn't work. So that's, you know, I think, you know, for me, at least as far as I'm aware, it's probably, you know, the biggest threat, and something to always keep in mind is that, you know, markets and preferences change. And at the very least, you have kind of two speeds now you got to manage against. And for us as an association, we do some political work. You know, we're not like other associations where all we do is, you know, kind of lobby. But for us, having a political administration that cares about OSHA and worker safety is good, just because, you know, when there are regulations, it requires companies to do things to keep their workers safe. So for, you know, a big existential threat for us would be a new administration coming in and saying, we're going to get rid of OSHA. We don't need this, you know, extra layer of the government. You know, figure it out at the state level. So, you know, that would be maybe not an existential threat, but certainly one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty obvious to see that, you know, those lobbyists and influencers associated with groups like OSHA are a huge concern, you know, something you got to pay a lot of attention to. I know we're bringing on Jim Miller here in a second, Jim.
We are indeed. Actually, I was about to say, where has the time gone? Our unthinkable half hour is already done. And for all of you losers over on social media who haven't registered to be on the webinar bridge, go to openrecon.com and register. And you can be here for the second half as well. We've got Jim Miller joined now as panelist. I just got my unthinkable PO app redeemed, by the way. This is your very last chance to scan the QR code and get your PO app for unthinkable. There'll be another one for Unspeakable here in a second when we go sort of a little more intimate, our private webinar bridge. I might even cuss, Cam, although you've probably not known me to be a big cusser.
I've heard it before.
But we can get into some kind of maybe less popular topics in the second half, Unspeakable, and get a little more controversial if we want to. Jim Miller's going to lead us off with that, but it's time to say goodbye, social networks. It's been real, and we'll see you next time on Running Good Thought.